Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Mini Break, your daily podcast for the biggest storylines, results, and controversies from the tennis world. Today is Monday, November 16th, the second day of the ATP Finals, now officially in the books. We saw Novak Djokovic and Daniil Medvedev start their campaigns with two comprehensive victories, matches we, of course, are going to break down on today's show. We'll also play a little bit of a game of Guess the Lines to preview tomorrow's matches, and joining me to do just that, you know him as the voice of the Monday match analysis. You may also know his smiling face from all the things he does with the Syracuse Athletic Department. I know him as my rival in terms of the best eyebrows in the tennis industry, Gil Gross. Gil, welcome back to the show. How are you doing on this Monday night?
Grusky, I'm always on call. It doesn't matter. 2 minutes notice, 30 seconds. I'll be here whenever you need me. Great to be on.
We should say before... I appreciate you saying that. I will add, I texted Gil probably, 45 minutes ago, and I was like, hey, on a scale of one to, one I'm willing to do an impromptu podcast to, I'm a really good boyfriend and I don't have that sort of free time, how available are you? You with the brilliant answer, I asked my girlfriend, she said, go for it, an impromptu podcast, that sounds great. That sounds like the type of relationship you want to be in. So, of course, shout out to the extended Steve Weissman family. As always, they are just a class act, but it is great to have you on the show. I know you have been talking a lot about these World Tour Finals on your own Monday match analysis. I will always recommend that to all of our listeners. Be sure to go check that out, as well as everything you are doing. But just even before we get into these matches, first 2 days in the books, how are you feeling through those two?
Pretty good. I mean, we haven't had our classic match yet, right? That's for sure. Mm-hmm. But there have been some intriguing storylines. I wish Rublev brought a better level in the Nadal match, because I did have higher hopes for that. I guess Medvedev's Zverev also got a little bit ugly. Schwartzman, Djokovic. I mean, so you know what? I think the best tennis is yet to come.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a fair assessment. I would also add, excuse me, I'm just so excited to hear your voice and I get to see your smiling face over Skype as well. But I would say the biggest takeaway for me has been the conditions in London this week. This ball seems to be bouncing a little bit higher than normal. These courts do seem to be playing a little bit slower. And obviously, the players who benefit that the most, Rafael Nadal, who, as you mentioned, made it look fairly routine in a win over the guy I name as my ATP Player of the Year in Andre Rublev. I think for Dominic Thiem, it was the same deal. The way he was able to attack with his forehand, it's because that ball was right in his strike zone against Tsitsipas. And certainly, it doesn't really matter the conditions. Novak Djokovic always going to look good. But that was my takeaway. Have you noticed that?
You know, it's funny. I didn't notice that until the Zverev-Medvedev match. And then I felt like I saw that contrast, because I had just watched them play in Paris, and I felt like Zverev was hitting every shot off of his shoelaces. And I didn't think that was the case this time. It didn't matter. There were other problems for Alexander. But I did notice that that Medvedev's ball in particular was not staying as low and skidding along the court surface.
Yeah, I'm trying not to say his name anymore. I'm just going to refer to him as Lord Voldemort, I think, because it's just, it's unbelievable.
I get it.
We talked about this. Shameless plug here. We did a show, our debut show on the Tennis One app today, and we talked about it with Luke Jensen. And, you know, as a player, you know, he talked about it. This just looms over the entire event. And it's the fact that there is no player union. That's a topic we've talked about before. The fact that there is no collective bargaining agreement where it legislates exactly how this process process would play out, and that exists in other sports, and it doesn't in this one. And, you know, today felt like the first time where he just felt a little bit overwhelmed on the court. Everything felt a little bit rushed, a little bit hurried. It just, he didn't sink his teeth into the match the way he was so good at doing in Cologne. And again, this is not an excuse party for Alex Zverev. Everything he's going through off the court, he has coming to him, but it's clear now, I'm sure after 2 weeks of it continuously, that it's starting to add up. And I do think today was the first day it might have creeped into his performance.
Well, I do agree. He got negative really fast, and I thought that he didn't have that work rate throughout the entirety of the match. I thought it kind of fell off a little bit, and we saw either some tired footwork or some lazy footwork. Ultimately, it's hard to say if it's about the off-court stuff or not, because he had just lost to Daniil. His second serve looked horrible for the first time in a while, by the way, because it was really looking fine for a very long time here, and now it's kind of it's a relapse. And then there was a stretch where he could have possibly gotten back into the match, and he wasn't getting Medvedev's serve back at all. So I think all those things combined maybe could have just really sunk Zverev mentally, or it could have been, you know, the off-court stuff. Maybe he just didn't have as much fight in him because of that, but, you know, who knows? It's hard to say.
Yeah. And no, it's not to belittle, by the way, Daniil Medvedev's performance. We're going to break down the match in even further depth in a little bit. I just meant, you know, when you talk about the second serve confidence issues, that is so often a mental problem, right? And I think that you're starting to see that creep in. And again, all this started out, I don't think he should be playing. And I think it's detrimental to his performance on court. I think it's detrimental to the event. And obviously what he's been accused of, you read Alia Sharipova's account, it's impossible to feel anything but sympathy for her, to not be outraged on her behalf. And it's just, I mean, you almost have to start every show with this topic. And this, again, we don't get to talk about the tennis. The first 5 minutes we're talking about this because he was on court, and, you know, it's the same question in each and every press conference. And I found it interesting that a lot of these other players, it's not that maybe they have been asked about it and the clips just aren't going around, but we haven't heard reporters press them. You know, we heard Andy Murray talk about it with Gael Monfils, but no player actively playing the event has talked about it. And I think that's a little interesting thing to note. But of course, what's been very interesting to note, the tennis we've seen on court. And so let's talk a little bit about those matches. Of course, the reason we're able to do that day in, day out here at Cracked Rackets is because of the support we get not only from our incredible listeners, not only from our Patreon family, but of course, from our sponsors at Midwest Sports and Aero Bar. We like to say it here, it's a lifestyle. We want to look good, we want to feel good so that we play good. As Gil can see on the Skype, I am always looking good and feeling good. That's why I play well. When I go out on the court, I can say it is a big thanks to my friends at Midwest Sports and Aero Bar as well. You go to MidwestSports.com, you're going to find anything you need from a tennis standpoint, all of the best brands, all of the best equipment, all in one location, MidwestSports.com. You use our promo code CR15, you'll get 15% off your order, free 2-day shipping on all orders exceeding $75. Best of all, that free can of Wilson Extra Duty tennis balls. Gil, what sort of, are you the sort of guy who tightens your racket tension when you go from outdoors to indoors? Because obviously a lot of that are doing that. A lot of us are doing that right now if we're able to play tennis.
You know, I got to say, maybe I should be thinking about that, but no. good idea.
It's fair. I've seen that forehand. No, I've seen the forehand. I don't know if you're there yet. But anyways, as you start to progress in your game, or maybe you're just looking for a new racket, a new string, you can trust our friends at Midwest Sports to lead you in the right direction. So go to MidwestSports.com when we're done. Go check it out. Use our promo code CR15 to let them know that we sent you there as well. And of course, to make sure you're, you know, that's going to make you look good. Now, how do you feel good? That's where our friends at Aero Bar come in, the only tennis-specific energy bar in the business. More potassium than a banana. Delicious cinnamon honey, oat, and chocolate chip flavors. And of course, best of all, comes with the podcast, our Getting to the Point episodes, where we focus on the importance of nutrition and fitness in the modern game. Go to aerobar.com, use the promo code CRACK15. Look good, feel good, play good. Midwest Sports, Aero Bar, Cracked Rackets. All right, with that in mind, let's talk some tennis, and we'll just go chronologically. I don't think we have to spend too long on the Djokovic-Schwartzman match, but let's start our conversation there. Novak Djokovic, awfully impressive in his 6-3, 6-2 victory over Diego Schwartzman today, of course, for Novak Djokovic. This is off of a performance in Paris that was subpar, to be kind. It just was not, you know, he did not look his best. Or did I say Paris? Was it Sofia? At this point, they're all blending together. I think it was Paris, right?
Sofia. Am
I
crazy? No, here? Sofia.
No, it was Sofia, yeah, when he lost to Sonego. I know who he played. That part I remember. but anyways, that loss to Lorenzo Sonego, his heart clearly wasn't in that match. And, you know, he said as much after in the post-match press conference today. It was all systems go. Novak Djokovic, just from start to finish, in every one of Diego Schwartzman's game, he looked awfully good on his own serve, as well in this match for Djokovic. He makes 64% of the first serves, wins 77% of those first serve points, 65% of the second serve points. It was just the exact sort of start you wanted to see from Novak Djokovic, right, Gil?
Oh, yeah. I mean, now I've been pretty adamant that the Novak that went, what was it, 20-0, 21-0 before Indian Wells, something like that. That Novak Djokovic has not been the same player, not quite, since coming back from the ATP pause. I think that's been clear. Even though he's won two titles, he's still great. We know that. He just hasn't been quite
you
the
see
same.
You see this smile on my face? I talk enough. Please finish your point. I'm ready, though, to come back.
Okay. Okay. This was some of the best tennis I've seen from Novak since coming back. Maybe the best, but I can't go there because it's just we know that Schwartzman, that he can handle Schwartzman. So I'm not willing to go that far. But I thought that this was as good as he's looked really in quite a while.
Look, for Novak Djokovic, he was undefeated to start the season. So, of course, the bar for him coming back to the restart, incredibly high. But let's remember, he ripped off, 10 more matches in a row or 11 matches in a row to start off in New York. He wins Cincinnati. He's in the quarterfinals of the U.S. Open before, obviously, or round of 16, before things go awry for him. And you look at the losses he suffered. I mean, his only loss outside of that Carreño Busta has been, and the Sonego match has been to Rafa in that Roland Garros final. And I mean, that's a loss in Rafa's house. It could be written off. I think he's looked fine. And I just think today was a reminder of what a motivated Novak Djokovic is. I think that's been the biggest thing for him day in, day out in each of these matches is, does he want to come out and just dominate from start to finish? And I know that's a little bit superficial, but at this point for Novak Djokovic, we know what his game looks like. We know what he's capable of doing. It's just how locked in is he? I think this was the first match maybe since, I don't know, the first two sets of that Tsitsipas semifinal where he really looked locked in from the start.
I would agree with that. Now, I think just to go back, I think he won the Western and Southern Open. He won it ugly. He didn't have his best tennis for long periods of time throughout a lot of matches. And then Rome really just reminded me of his week in New York pre-US Open. I thought they were similar tournaments where Djokovic, the mental giant he is, really just, he won every match, but he didn't always play his best. And I felt like this was just a complete performance where Djokovic, dominant with the second serve, knowing exactly what he wants to do with that shot, finding the perfect amount of aggression. I thought he hit triple digits on most of his second serves. I don't have the exact average, but it's that shot was really on point. And then on the other side of things, he was smoking Diego's second serve, really taking advantage of it. High margin aggression on these second serve returns. And I think Diego, he was not good. I can get the stat. He was 7-for-20.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, to your point, Djokovic, 103 mile per hour second serve average. When he's hitting it like that, you know he's feeling good on the serve. And just to quickly look at the numbers of this match, there are 99 total points played against Diego Schwartzman in 99 points to make only 14 unforced errors. You're doing your job. And you look at the spread of the rallies in this match, Djokovic, +5 on rallies under 5 shots, +8 on rallies 5-9 shots, and then +6 on rallies over 9 shots. He showed the patience. He showed the willingness to play plus one tennis when it was called for. He, you know, played with angles. He threw in the drop shot. He did all of his Djokovic things, but there was never the mental lapse. There was never the two double faults and an unforced error, and now I'm down love 40. And yeah, I can dig my way out of this game, but just from start to finish, he was locked in. And this is one of my takes I stand by passionately. I'm always happy to plug a tweet of mine. I swear to God, Gil, if you switch Diego Schwartzman and Andre Rublev, this tournament is better for everyone. It just is, because now Rublev gets to play the grinders. He has time on his hand. His lack of elite athleticism isn't exposed. And then Schwartzman's like, oh, perfect. I get to just use your power and then use my speed, and now my speed becomes a weapon. He's in heaven. And so if I could do anything to this World Tour Finals, it would be to switch those two's group.
Interesting. I actually think that Rublev has a good chance at maybe rushing Team and Tsitsipas in a way where, mm-hmm. you know, you really can't rush Medvedev, you can't rush Zverev or Djokovic. They all love pace. So I actually look at it a little bit differently, where I do see your point where Rublev will have time to rip. It's just, will he get the payoff for ripping? Or is Novak going to do credit Matt Willis for this, but his Pikachu, and take the pace and be like, thank you very much, I will use this against you, and just, you know, do his thing on the counter striking. Okay, that's really interesting though, because I haven't thought of it your way.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can't do that. Like, that's not a thing. It's not like it's ever going to happen. I'm just saying, outside of what was the adjustment, having an app where we can find all of these stats, where we don't have to cherry pick from our friend Vaunch, of course, and we appreciate him posting these stats. But outside of just having an app where you could find things like winners, average second serve speed, net points, all of the various metrics that make covering tennis so much easier to do, my second request, I suppose, actually, my second request would be to rename the groups, like Tokyo 1970, London 2020. Come on, we can be more creative than that. Like, I just, like, let's call it straight up, group backhand, group forehand. Like, I would have laughed.
Oh, yeah.
I think everyone would have laughed. Like, it would have been the gift that kept on giving. We just could have been more creative. Or even if you want to sell out, you want to call this the Reese's backhand group, or like the, I'm happy to sell it to a sponsor. Just more creativity. But then the third thing would be switching Rublev and Schwartzman.
Well, I embarrassed myself on Twitter today because I called group Tokyo, I called them group London, and it was a whole mess. if they called them forehand and backhand, I can guarantee you I would not have confused them.
It's simple. It's straight to the point. It's like dropping the in Facebook, right? It's not the Facebook. It's just Facebook. It's cleaner that way. And so it would have been cleaner that way. But anyways, in terms of looking forward right now, you look at our friends at DraftKings, the futures odds. Djokovic right now, the favorite to win the event. He's plus 110 after this match. Any reason to disagree with those odds?
No, definitely not. I came into the tournament thinking, okay, Novak Djokovic, here's the best player in these conditions on this surface in the world. Let's just see how motivated he looks. Let's see if he seems like he's in shape mentally and physically, and we got our answer today. He is.
How high would the odds have to be for Diego Schwartzman for you to put $100 on it? How high?
Now, I didn't check the odds on this one, so I'm at a disadvantage because I don't even know what they were here. But I would want like plus 750 maybe?
To win the event?
Oh, to win the event. I thought you meant,
yes,
to beat Djokovic.
Yes, to win the event.
Oh.
No, excuse me, to win the event. And by the way, the odds ended about plus 560.
Okay. Okay, so I think, yeah.
But
okay.
To win, yeah, so you nailed that one, and that's a nice sneak preview for Guess the Lines. But yeah, for Schwartzman to win this event, $100. And look, I'm not saying it's happening. I'm just saying, how ridiculous would the odds have to be for you to do that?
Man, they would have to be ridiculous. He's the only player in the field who would really surprise me if he won.
I'd have to make $1 million in return, like, yeah. Without question, minimum.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably just... I don't want to be disrespectful, but yeah, there's just no comprehensible. You know?
Yeah, light that money on fire.
We love Schwartzman on the pod. Why would you ask me a question like that, just inviting me to disparage him?
Yeah, of course, the Weissman family would disapprove. No, I would say this. If you're thinking about putting $100 on Diego Schwartzman, instead, go to your local hospital and feed our first responders. Much better use of that $100. But yeah, just wanted to ask you that question. And again, 3-2 Novak Djokovic. He advances to 1-0. Diego Schwartzman, 0-1.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe. More than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
Of course, our second match of the day, the match we started talking about a little bit at the front, Daniil Medvedev, Alex Zverev, a rematch of the Paris final. I know I have that event correct. Gil. Of course, last year we saw Medvedev defeat Zverev in a Masters event leading up to the year-end finals. Zverev then beats Medvedev, but this time Medvedev able to repeat his success. He knocks off Alex Zverev in straight sets in this one. In the end, it's Daniil Medvedev taking a 6-3, 6-4 victory over Zverev. And to be honest, this one felt really routine, Gil. I mean, you look in terms of break points, sometimes it really is that simple, but there was the early break for Zverev to start the match, but other than that one, no breaking of Daniil Medvedev's serve. Sometimes things are as simple as, oh yeah, you're playing a 6'6" guy indoors, right?
Yeah, well, Medvedev went on a run of 9 points in a row on serve, mm-hmm. where he hit unreturned serves. Aces and service winners, just a string of 9 points. So his serve became a really big deal, especially, I would say, towards the tail end of the first set. Because early on, this was like a grind fest. I mean, it took what, 20, 25 minutes for them to get through like six games, something ridiculous like that. And
my
then
kind of
Medvedev
tennis.
Started. Yeah, your kind of tennis?
Yeah, oh, I love it. Reminds me of Djokovic Murray matchups, like the way these two just it's who is going to be daring enough to try and take the space, to try and be the aggressor, because both of these guys, when you get them to the outer thirds, right, that's when their length, their athleticism starts to shine through. And in this match, I just thought for Daniil Medvedev, I mean, you look at the stats, 67% of his first serves go in, he wins 74% of those first serve points, 57% of his second serve points, and again only broken one time in the match. That's a really good start.
Medvedev was that guy. I thought the whole time, if you're going to talk about who is being the aggressor, who's forcing the issue here now, at times it resulted in a plethora of forehand errors, you know, strings of them. So I can't say that it was always pretty for Medvedev, and I think both players' weaknesses were on full display. Zverev with the second serves and the double faults, and Medvedev just not very efficient on his attacking forehands, especially from the middle of the court, missing a lot. Zverev able to defend a lot of them, but ultimately Daniil came up with enough, and especially in big moments, up 4-2, both players were just breaking each other back and forth. And if you look at when Medvedev finally held and broke that pattern to go up 5-2 in the first set, he hit like 3 forehand winners in the game. So he was the one to go and, you know, get after it.
I think you nailed it perfectly. Medvedev did enough in this one to survive. I mean, you look at the numbers, 21 winners against 21 unforced errors. Now, breaking even isn't great, but when your opponent's only winning 21% of his second serve points, when he's thrown in 7 double faults, all of which seem to always come on, you know, either love 15 or 15, 30 points to just dig the deficit a little bit further, you just have to break even. And look, Zverev on his first serve, as he continues to look, it's so successful. I mean, he's also 6'6", and you're playing indoors, and when he's able to pop that first serve, play +1 tennis, it looks really, really good. But In this match, you know, he lost confidence in the second serve. There were times when, as you mentioned, the forehand started spraying. I thought Medvedev did a really good job of just keeping the ball low and flat. And you could tell Zverev was having difficulty. You know, his backhand, it's so smooth. If you hit a ball with heavy topspin into that backhand, that's why he matches up so well against lefties, just into his strike zone, good night. He's opening up that backhand down the line. He's having a feast. But with how low and flat Medvedev hits the ball, particularly on an indoor court, I thought it caused discomfort for Zverev. Clearly, he could never find his strike zone, it felt like, in this match.
And I felt like he was waiting for the ball to come to him. I didn't see the urgency in his footwork, and that's where the ball will drop even lower. And he just wasn't creating, you know, the offense that he needed to. I think that's a good point, though. Did you hear what Jannik Sinner said about Medvedev's ball being... He said
I always
that,
want
that
to hear
Medvedev's
from the Sin
ball,
man.
Yeah. He said that Medvedev's ball gives and Mannarino. He said Medvedev and Mannarino yeah. are the two players who give him the most trouble right now, because I think he can't stand the way that the ball doesn't bounce up for him.
Oh, the other take is that Stefan Kozlov is just 6'1" Daniil Medvedev. That's another one of my favorite takes. And also, I'm really upset. This is so petty. I don't know if you know this about me, Gil. I have an ego. Don't let the haircut fool you. I have a healthily fueled ego. But I tweeted out that Martin Dam reminds me of maybe slightly better Yuri Vesely. And I'm, like, so certain that comparison is correct. And, like, just no affirmation thus far on Twitter. It's devastating. Devastating. I'm like, come on, guys. Like, you got... Yeah, I'm just like, can someone please respect a Yuri Vesely comp? Do you know how rare it is to get that sort of opportunity to throw in a Yuri? I've been watching Yuri Vesely for 7 years for this moment.
Oh, yeah.
And it's finally come to fruition. And just, anyways, this is what happens now. You know, I don't know if people are obviously aware, prior to everything that happened, Zverev was my guy. And it's like, well, that's not a thing anymore. So I have to, like, go watch Challenge. I'm going back to my roots. I was like, you need to go back to the Challenger level. You have Orlando back. You have Carey back. You have Mike Cation back in your life. Just go enjoy some of the young up-and-comers, because these current players just keep disappointing you. And I was like, I justified that to myself.
That does fascinate me. About basically Zverev's fans, because, and, you know, people who really, really liked him a lot, because obviously, you know, more, less, you know, his fans, even the people close to him, would never know about something like this for the most part. So it's like, I mean, can I just ask you, like, how did you process that?
No, it's a very fair question, and someone, I'm not going to say who, because it was in the context of something that I can't share, but he was like, hey, can you read this from the perspective of a Zverev fan? And I was just like, you think after all this I'm still a Zverev fan? I was like, I am slightly offended, but I'm going to let that slide, because I'm very happy to help you in whatever way that I can, and it sucks. Like, I mean... Even from a tennis perspective, you wanted it was, you know, even beyond his off-court action, his arrogance prior to all of this coming out, just from a tennis perspective, I was fascinated by him because, and I've said it repeatedly on this podcast, I think there are 10 minutes in every Alex Zverev match where you watch him play and you're like, this guy could be the best tennis player to ever play. And I'm not saying he's going to end up with all of the records. I'm saying he could rip off a 3-4 year run where he wins 8-9 slams, Federer-esque, something crazy. Because of just the physical tools and the things he can do on a tennis court. And if it ever clicked mentally, just look out. But now this clouds all of that. And when you commit a sin of this nature, something so egregious as physical and emotional abuse of a girlfriend from a position of power, particularly in 2020, in a time when we're so educated on why, you know, our culture needs to move past that era, it's just... It's to listen to women and to hear their side of the story and to understand their perspective, it's just unacceptable. And, like, I understand the concept of, you know, innocent until proven guilty. Obviously, that's what the American justice system is built upon. But you throw in just his lack of coherent response to Sharapova's allegations, his lack of willingness to really go on the record to address the details of her story. The lack of the ATP's action and, you know, being transparent about what their investigation is going to look like, it's all just despicable. It's a huge cloud over tennis.
You pretty much said it all there. And basically it's only getting worse and worse so far. And today it was just the delivery of his red statement. But really, ever since the allegations have come out, not one step that he's made has felt correct. So, you know, it does. It's so difficult, and it really has taken away. And this is not what's important. What's important is that, you know, Olya gets the support that, you know, and that she feels, you know, as best as she can possibly feel through this moment. But it really is a stain. You said it well.
Yeah, and we are two men of similar backgrounds, so I want to ask this question, though, still from your perspective, because, you know, again, it sucks. It's always great to have some sort of female perspective on this. Obviously, we don't have that on this show, and I hope we're not being insensitive by even mentioning Alex Zverev. And if we are, let us know, because that's something we want to learn from. But my question to you, covering these ATP Tour Finals as you are on Monday Match Analysis, which again you can find on YouTube, you can find the podcast version wherever you listen to your podcasts. Everyone should be tuning into Monday Match Analysis. But have you felt any, you know, apprehension in terms of, you know, how to cover this? I mean, again, because we're both of similar age as well. And at age 25, do I feel like I have any sort of standing to morally criticize Alex Zverev? What have I done in my life to earn the right to be here and criticize him other than as a part, you know, as someone who is observing this and reading the story behind it? But I don't know, like, I just feel icky. Like, I don't even want to bring up his name, and at the same time, I don't want to minimize Sharapova's accusations, as you mentioned.
It's been hard. I said my piece on Friday. This was before.
Very well, I might add.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. So, I mean, on Friday, this is even before the Rothenberg piece came out, and I talked about what I felt like I was qualified to talk about. And that's all I could do. I know a little bit about the law, especially when it comes to, you know, just basics. So I offered that, and basically how the law does not cover how we need to handle these kinds of situations. And it's insufficient, and it's not enough. And then I saw something on Twitter that I felt was really illuminating from a victim, and I just decided to use my platform to elevate that. Then on Monday, after the Paris final, I was in a position where I couldn't watch it live. I would have had to watch it on replay. And I felt like I had already said my piece on the domestic abuse allegations, but yet I didn't really feel like talking about tennis and ignoring it. That just didn't feel right to me. So I didn't do a show. So these are the things that have been, you know, that I've been faced with, basically as, you know, in the decision-making role that I'm in, and I'm my own boss. So that's why I can make that decision. Might've been different if I had an employer and, you know, if I had to make air, I would have made air, and I would have done the best I could. But being my own boss, I just didn't feel the desire that Monday to do a show. So I just didn't. And I hope I answered your question.
No, you absolutely did, because I felt a similar way when the allegations first came out. I happened to obviously be friends with Ben at this point. I don't even know if that's a name drop. Sometimes I think that gets me in trouble. I swear to God, I get more texts being like, why do you support Ben? That's not true. I don't get that many texts. Let's not get the scale, but I get texts where it's like, why do you support Ben? I'm like, why are you texting me this? I'm like, you're the one with the issue here. But anyways, I knew he was going to be interviewing her. I knew there was going to be reporting on the topic. And so it's just like, how you have to let the facts speak for themselves. I agree with you. And there's a reason one person has been very transparent and willing to go on the record. The other hasn't. Generally, just as an objective observer, I will favor the person who's transparent, because clearly they don't have anything to hide. And I agree. I think that's, you know, at this point, we look at him as a prop. He is the filler. He is the opponent for Daniil Medvedev. And yeah, he's an opponent playing tennis, but I'm just done covering the perspective of his career, what each win means. I'm just viewing him as a singular match now. It's just like, okay, Alex Zverev was in this match. There's no other importance beyond the fact that he just happened to be in this match. But of course, we have spent enough time talking about him today. We will continue to watch that story unfold. One last thing I want to do with you before I let you go here on Monday night. We have to play a little game of Guess the Lines, because obviously I saw you doing your work for the Action Network during the U.S. Open. I know this is something that is right up your alley, and it's a perfect way for us to preview tomorrow's matches. So with that in mind, Westhoff, give me some sort of Guess the Line sound effect, please. All right, let's get right into it, Gil. Let's start with the matchup I think all of us very excited for. We didn't get it at the French Open. We get it here at these year-end championships. It's Rafael Nadal looking, of course, for his first title in London, taking on last year's finalist Dominic Thiem. I'm going to give you the floor here first, Gil, and if you want to talk me through your thought process as well as you give me your line, please do. But Nadal Thiem, what do you got?
Yeah, I'm excited for this one. Nadal, it was difficult to get a read on his form because I don't think Rublev played well enough for us to really see what Nadal is capable of, to be quite honest with you. What we did see is that Rafa is serving tremendously. For Thiem, I was very impressed with his opening round win over Tsitsipas, the way he worked himself into that match. He started very consistent, very disciplined, and then he started taking more risk to great effect in the third set. So this is I think that this line's going to be close. I think this is a tough one to call. I just think, you know, especially with Nadal coming off the loss in Paris, I don't think that there will just be some kind of defaults kind of Rafa Nadal name recognition invincibility there. However, I do think he will be a slight favorite, so I have him at -120 is my guess the line.
So here's where, sadly, my friend, you are slightly off. There is always a Rafael Nadal, a Roger Federer, a Novak Djokovic, a Serena Williams bump. Always, always, always. Whatever you write down, you got to add, you know, -025 to it, because just his name in the draw, it transcends everything else, and people are willing to bet on Rafa to throw him in parlays. If you see Rafa at anything above -200, more often than not, if he's not playing a Djokovic or a Federer, you're throwing him into your parlay, even if it's, you know, I want to bet the Giants money line against the Eagles, and I'm going to throw Rafa in that parlay as well just to get a little extra value. Why wouldn't you? So I had that in mind. I also had in mind the fact that, look, to the naked eye, right? Rafa, 9-5 career head-to-head against Dominic Thiem. You look at their record on hard courts. Yes, Dominic Thiem beat him in this year's Australian Open quarterfinals, but overall, I think they're just 1-1 on the surface. And so, of course, given the lack of sample size, I don't think they've ever even played indoors. And then the fact that Nadal just won a straight set match over someone in form as Andre Rublev. And I know to the eye test, we all saw that wasn't an in form Andre Rublev, but to the math, to the formula makers, that means Rafael Nadal comes in this one off of a straight set victory. Dominic Thiem obviously physically tested against Tsitsipas. I had Nadal -175, Dominic Thiem +135, and I swear, I don't cheat on these, I promise you. In the end, Rafael Nadal -182, Dominic Thiem +150. So I think I box you out on this one. Yep. I will say this. I think when the match gets closer to starting, the money lines will be closer to your spread than my spread, if that makes sense, because I agree with you. I don't think there's any reason Rafael Nadal should be a prohibitive favorite in this one. I think it's pretty much a pick 'em, right?
I think it's pretty close to that. I do think that one thing that could help Nadal is if he's going to serve as well as he did against Rublev, the shot that has really not progressed like you might hope for Thiem is the return. So perhaps Nadal gets a little bit of an edge there. But yeah, I mean, as it is right now, I mean, I think there's big value on Thiem.
Yeah, I agree with you. I would say the bet for me more than anything is the over 2.5 sets. I think this is a match that could very much go the distance. And I also think, just fundamentally, something to keep in mind. I mean, it's still a lefty indoors against a one-handed backhand. And certainly Dominic Thiem's got a one-handed backhand that stands up against pressure. And, you know, he's, I think, 62-30 in his career against lefties. But at the same time, there are inherent, you know, every so often you're going to throw a slice out wide that's just going to get him stretched, and then Rafa has a plus one forehand, and we've all seen that pattern unfold time after time after time, and the question is, does Dominic Thiem have the legs to track down that first plus one forehand? Can he, from that position, flip the script? Because we have seen this match before, right? I think we all know how it's going to go. That Dominic Thiem backhand return, how it holds up, probably the most important detail in this match.
Yep, I think it pretty much always is, although Nadal also needs to mix it up, which he's been doing a much better job of. I think that Nadal's return was not good in Paris, and that's something to watch because I really like the way Dominic Thiem hit his spots against Tsitsipas and really got a lot from his first serve. So there's going to be a lot of power tennis. Ultimately, it's going to be hard for either player to get back in points once they're on the wrong side of things. Once the other one is ripping forehands, that's not gonna be good on this surface. So that's why it's very important. Whoever serves better in this match, serves and returns better, is gonna have a good shot, because how you start that rally is gonna be so important.
My number of the match coming from our friends at Tennis Abstract. And I don't know if they're my friends. I just consider them a friend because of how generous it is as a resource. But in all five of Dominic Thiem's wins over Rafael Nadal, he won over 47% of his second serve return points. Now, that's a little thing. 47% might not have to be the number. And yeah, if you're winning second serve return points, that seems obvious. You're probably going to win the match. But he has to do it. That is something that's going to be critical. He has to, you know, maybe take a step or two forward on that second serve, not be camped 6 feet behind the baseline, be aggressive, take control of points. Should be a really fun match. I'm going to ask you the toughest question in this business. Give me a prediction.
I am going to go Dominic Thiem in a close three sets.
I love that pick. I want to pick it as well. I feel like for the sake of the listeners, I should go Nadal, just because obviously you're my arch rival. In terms of the eyebrow power rankings, by the way, it's me and Sampras tied for first. You're a close third, really close third. Like, we had the committee met and we decided we'll see how 2020 ends. There's a very good chance you start 2021 also tied for first. And then, you know, Noah Eagle, just a dead last in fourth.
Last. That's really what Look, as much as we're rivals, I mean, we can both agree on one thing, is that we both have better eyebrows than Noah Eagle. That's what we know.
Oh, no, he just looks so tailored on that Tennis Live set. I'm like, God, what an impressive young man. Yes. But all right, with that in mind, let's move on. I agree with you, Thiem in three, but I think it's going to be really, really close. All right, with that in mind, let's move on to our next match. Tsitsipas taking on Rublev for what feels like, I don't know, the fifth, sixth, seventh, maybe 12th time since the tour restarted in August. Now, of course, this is going to be their first matchup on a hard court since Rublev knocked off Tsitsipas in a four-set U.S. Open. I believe it was the quarterfinal? Sem? I don't even remember at this point. That was this year's U.S. Open? No, that was last year's U.S. Open. Excuse me. First round of last year's U.S. Open was when Rublev knocked him off in first four round. Sets. That's the last time they played on a hard court, of course, in the matches they have played here in 2020. It's Rublev, I believe, with a 2-1? 1-1? No, it's 1-1 split?
3-1.
2-1? I don't even know. All these 3-1. Thank you. Again, there's been a lot of tennis.
One of them's a challenger.
Yeah, so, you know, grain of salt. The point being, there are no secrets between these two. They know exactly what to expect from one another. Of course, both coming off of losses in their first matches. Rublev, a straight set loss to Nadal. Tsitsipas, 3-2 Thiem. Let's play guess the lines. I will go first here on this one. I had Tsitsipas as a slight favorite, and it is ever so slight. And I didn't feel good about that pick either. I was thinking, and the truth is, Andrei Rublev's been better on an indoor hard court this season, but But then I factored in Tsitsipas won this event last year. Technically, he's the higher seeded of the two player. He clearly looked better according to the eye test in the first round matches. So I went Tsitsipas minus 125, Rublev minus 105. I don't think there's going to be an underdog in this match. What do you think about my reasoning? Give me your reasoning in line as well.
I pretty much agree with you. I'm going to tack on two factors here in favor of Tsitsipas. First of all, I think that straight set victory at Roland Garros will factor in for people because it really was that kind of match where it's like, oh, Stefano solved the puzzle here. You know, it was not just a win. It was a very much like Rublev can't really do anything on the court right now because Tsitsipas figured him out. So there's that. The second thing is I think that there is some Andre Rublev skepticism in the world, and I don't agree with it.
But the hottest take skepticism. Thank you. I agree. That's why I sent the text tonight, because I was like, I think this might come up.
I think it's ridiculous. You get this one-dimensional comment, and I have the same response every time. Give me that dimension. I want that dimension so bad. Whatever that one dimension is, I would like it 7 days of the week. Give me that dimension.
Not to get grim, but if they were like, Alex, 2 years off the end of your life, but you get to hit forehands like him for the rest of it, I'm like, done. Like, do you want to know why he goes after the forehand on every point? Because do you know how much fun it would be if you could hit a forehand like that? And I think the most impressive thing has been the added dimensions, the fact that he's much more comfortable moving forward now. The first volley looks better. The fact that he's starting to realize, oh, if I hit a kick serve on the ad side, I'm going to get a forehand. And if I get a plus one forehand, I win the point. And it's just these little adjustments that have made his game that much more effective. Now, to what I said a little bit earlier, I still don't think he's a top-tier athlete. I think he is going to maximize his movement. He is going to become as good of a mover as is capable of his body, and I think he has top-tier power, but I think Rafa did a really good job exposing Rublev's lack of elite lateral movement, changing direction on him. That's my biggest concern for him, the lack of elite lateral movement, not the fact that he's one-dimensional, because, yeah, give me that dimension.
That's fair. It's fair on the movement. That's why he just needs to be an aggressive player, but he has the racket talent to do that, to both return aggressively, his first serve much improved, hitting his spots now. His plus one forehand, you mentioned, it's just one of the best in the game, and that'll take you so far. I would like to see him improve that transition game. He can get a lot better with the volleys, and his touch can get better. Now, as for the guess the line, given the way that their last meeting went at the French and the ridiculous Rublev skepticism and the way he looked against Nadal, I think Tsitsipas is favored minus 140.
And what do you have Rublev at?
What's the math there? I'm not great at that.
It doesn't have to be exact. About plus one. Honestly, you know what? We're going to give you the victory because you said minus 140. Tsitsipas minus 139 right now. So, hey, great shot to you. You nailed that one. You boxed me out. Rublev plus 116. Bravo. Bravo. Well done. By the way, as we're talking, Nadal down to minus 177. So literally, I'm telling you, that thing is going to fall all night long. Here's the thing. Indoor hard court, Tsitsipas is better on an indoor hard court than he is on clay, but so is Andre Rublev.
I don't agree with
and
that.
It's like, oh, okay.
I'll go. Take him on clay. And I know he's won 3 titles, I believe, on indoor hard court. So the results are, I would say, probably ambiguous. If we looked at it, we'd both have an argument. I think against the elite competition, especially – when he gets that extra time where his return is no longer a big problem and he's putting them in play, I really like that for Tsitsipas. And also, his RPMs on his forehand, not to be, that should not go underlooked.
So I would like to amend my statement. You are correct. Comparatively, Tsitsipas is better on a clay court than other pro players are on a clay court. However, I also think his game is better on an indoor hard court than it is on a clay court, if that makes sense. So compared to the diminishing returns for other players when they switch surfaces, I think Tsitsipas is less effective. I think his game remains as effective because, as you mentioned, his forehand can hit through any court and he gets more time on that backhand side. Plus, he's a very good mover. But I think he is still better on an indoor court. I just think Andrei Rublev. Yeah, on a Rublev court. That's what I was going to say, on an indoor Andre. That's mixing points here. Hey, great shot. But I think indoor Andre is that much better on an indoor hard court.
Yeah, I think that...
That's math, by the way. That was just so everyone, everyone listened to that. That was a formula I just played out.
Right, that's why we went to school. I think that Rublev can really suffocate Stefanos in this matchup, just because it's so much, it's totally different than Roland Garros because the pace that Rublev can bring to the court, he takes the ball so early and hits so big. If you're a player who likes time, you're not going to get any. And I have a feeling Tsitsipas is going to be pretty bothered by that and affected. And I think if Rublev hits his spots, Tsitsipas is probably the worst returner in this field of eight. And I think that Rublev can just sneak out enough breaks to get this done. I don't see Tsitsipas having any fun on return against Rublev.
Yeah, I think that's a really good take. And so with that in mind, it sounds like you're leaning Andrei Rublev.
Yeah, I am.
The double dog day. Is why you follow Gil Gross, folks, because if you are a fan, you should take the double dog. In fact, I'm going to put that in right now. Dominic Thiem, Andrei Rublev, if you parlay both of them, and it's always risky to parlay two underdogs, plus 429, I'm going to have to talk to my accountant, Daniel Westhoff. We'll see. We'll look into it. We're going to run the numbers one more time. I don't know, man. Here's the thing. Tsitsipas is, in terms of attitude, the guy who bounces back as well from a loss as anyone. Is there anyone who probably after losing that match was like, I would like to get back on court, preferably in an hour? You know, just let me go eat something and maybe get a stretch in, but I'm ready to go play another 2 out of 3 set match. I feel like that, and I mean, Andrei Rublev, by the way, the same deal. He probably was like, hey, we're going to go train another 2 out of 3 set match because that performance was unacceptable. Three sets. That's the theme of the day. Like, I think today's the day we get our three set battles because now there's a little more urgency, right?
Yes. I think especially Tsitsipas Rublev, obviously coming off the loss, but you know, they really have a lot to prove, and I also think we could see nerves come into play with both of them in the tight moments because this match is going to mean so much to both of them. So I just like these matchups. You know, it's not even about – maybe it's not even about being desperate. It's just about two good matchups because you know that Nadal and Thiem are going to slug it out, and the same can be said for Tsitsipas Rublev. I'm excited.
Yeah, should be a really fun day of tennis, and of course we will be back tomorrow to break down all of the action, but I have kept you far longer than I promised, so we can wrap up today's show. On this note, of course, again, I highly recommend to everyone, go check out Monday Match Analysis, go check out everything you're doing, Gil, but for those who want to hear a little bit more, give us a little sneak peek of what you have in store.
In the coming days.
All of the above. Just all I want to hear above. Your life plans. What's you proposing? My life plans. Is there something I need? Do I need to get ready for something? No, I'm just kidding.
Well, let's see. Tomorrow, I'm probably going to make a bacon, egg, and cheese. No. I'm doing a lot of ATP finals match recaps. All right. I'm gonna keep them coming. So you can subscribe to me on YouTube. It's just Gil Gross. My name, Gil with two L's. For continued coverage throughout this tournament. And then it's off season, Grusky.
Mm-hmm. Next episode of the Big Three. Yeah. Next episode of the Big Three.
Yes. Yeah. With the outstanding tennis journalists, Joel Drucker and Amy Lundy. I do a YouTube show and podcast about the Big Three called Three. Three, a tennis show is the full name if you want to Google search it. You know, I mean, look at that. I forget to plug it, and you remember.
Well, here's the thing, because as we know, I hold a lifelong grudge against you, because again, there can only be one with eyebrows these nice. But the grudge I also hold, you might have to redo the Andy Murray episode, because A, it was so phenomenal it should be run again, but B, can I just get like a 5-minute, you know how, what's it called? Oh my
cameo?
God, this shows you the last time I read a freaking book. A cameo would be great as well, but what's it called on the inside of the book? The foreword, excuse me.
Yes.
I would just like a 3-minute monologue foreword on Andy Murray, and then you rerun the show.
I can just put it in Premiere. You just send it my way, and we can make it happen.
All right, I'll get a haircut for it as well, so we can do it on
video. That's a good idea. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, perfect. No, with that in mind, well, again, Monday Match Analysis, the three, all of the above, you can find it at – it's at @Gil_Gross?
That's the Twitter.
Yeah, at Twitter. You can find it, yes. And find all of the coverage, of course, at Monday Match Analysis on YouTube. Of course, here at Cracked Rackets, we're going to keep rocking and rolling. Mini breaks all week long. GSP aces of the day. Cracked interviews coming up this week in terms of college contenders. Hopefully, Michigan will give us the green light to run that Steinberg interview. And then we will have University of Florida coach Brian Shelton. So be on the lookout for all of that. And of course, you can find it all on our website, crackedrackets.com. Shout out, as always, to our super producers, Max Flick and Daniel Westoff, for the of an end job they do day in, day out, making all of this content possible. Of course, shout out to our friends at Midwest Sports and AeroBar as well. Go to MidwestSports.com, use that promo code CR15. Go to AeroBar.com, use the promo code CRACKED15. Gil, I need you to remember the phrase, that's the break, because as always, for my wonderful co-host, Gil Gross, our super producers, Max Fliegner and Daniel Westoff, our friends at Midwest Sports and AeroBar, and all of us here at both Cracked Rackets and the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, I'm your host, Alex Gross. And Gil, what do we tell our listeners?
That's the break.
There it is. I love it. And we will see you all tomorrow. Thank you, Gil. Always a pleasure, my friend.
Thanks, Grusky. This was great.